Okay, come on in, y'all. You don't have the last page? My anger trick, it's the anger, it should be the inside of the last page. And if it's not, then I'm very sorry. Yours may be the third from the last page. There it is. Okay, good. For those of you that are wondering, I am recording these. We're putting these on the website. And there's also access to the class notes there as well. This is not at our Facebook site. This is at our SalisawCofC.com website that you can go to. And you can go to the members page. There's a little button that says members. You click on members. There's a password to get to the members page. The password to the members page is member. Because we're trying to keep people out of it, right? It's pretty simple. Type in member. It will take you to a page, and at the bottom of the buttons, you'll find one that says Bible class. Click that one, and it will take you to, and you'll see the anger management stuff there. For those of you that are new, this is a little different approach than what we normally do in our Bible classes, but for this 8-week period, I'm sharing material that I believe is can help a church and really help individuals and help families deal with anger. And why I think that's important, I hope will become evident as we go through the study together. But fill out the anger triggers questionnaire, please, and do that. And now, while you're finishing that up, I want to kind of go over the keys to chapter 1 just very quickly. Last week, we talked about what anger is. And anger, and we'll give it another definition today so that you can see. I gave you the ABCs of anger, which Mike Speakman, who's the author of this material, he really likes to use puns, and they're really cheesy. And there are moments whenever I just roll my eyes and say, oh my goodness, you know, Mike, what were you thinking? But he talks about the ABCs of anger, and the anger thermometer shows where when your anger is at this level, then you're at this point. When you're at this level, you should have that in your notes. Hopefully you filled all that out. But the big thing I want you to remember from last week is that anger is the energy that God gives to us to rise up against injustice. Okay? That's the best working definition of anger that I've been able to find, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment when we talk about the definition of anger. As a matter of fact, you can turn to that page in your sheet. A definition of anger. And we're going to talk a little bit about God's anger as we go through this, because we're told in the scripture that we can be angry and not sin. And I have talked to people that have found that to be hard to believe, right? But I asked the question last week, God ever angry?
Yes.
Okay. Give an example when God was angry. One at a time. Give an example how God was angry. I'm sorry?
When the Israelites were worshiping idols.
We can think of the anger that he had when Aaron made the golden calf, and God had Moses grind up all the calf and made him drink the remnants of it, and so on. Was Jesus ever angry?
Yes.
Demonstrated how? He went through the temple. He overturned the tables, right? And I brought up last week, and this is my own understanding, the cat of nine tails that he made, I don't think he swung it at people near as much as he swung it at livestock. used it as a way of driving things out. And I don't see Jesus running around in an uncontrolled rage, because that would go against all that we're talking about here. I think that the Bible would demonstrate that Jesus was very much under control, but his anger was being demonstrated. And we're going to talk more about that, if not today, next week, what that looks like. So let's go back to the definition of anger page now. Anger, and this is Mike Speakman's material. He says, anger, quoting Ernie Larson, who was a counselor, anger is the emotional response to perceived injustice. Okay? Anger, is anger an emotion? Yes, anger is definitely an emotion. Anger is not an action. Okay? It's a response or a reaction to unjust treatment. Every time a situation occurs where you perceive that you've been treated unfairly, anger will result. Okay. And if you disagree or want to question any of that, stop me and say, wait a minute. And we're going to ask a couple of questions in a minute. If it seems like a small injustice, it will be a small amount of anger. If it's perceived as a large injustice, a large amount of anger will result. Now, that's if everybody's in normal mode, right? Have you ever done a small injustice to someone and they just all over you? Spell that, by the way. But yeah, why does that happen?
Something built up in it.
All right. There's something built up, and we're going to talk about that building up process next week. But something is built up inside of them where they allow it to overrun where they need to be. And these anger triggers that you see, the things that trigger your anger, can sometimes bring out a bigger than normal, bigger than healthy response. And we'll talk about why. People cannot get angry for no reason, which I hate that sentence, by the way. Those of you that are English majors look at that and go, that's a horrible sentence, and I agree with that. So let's say it a different way. People will get angry with cause, okay? Even if they don't want to get angry, they will get angry, right? Because anger is normal. Can we set that baseline? Anger is a normal thing. Do you know somebody who never gets angry? Apparently you don't. Anger is something that we all have within us. Okay? A person can sometimes get angry when not really feeling angry in order to intimidate. Have you known people like that? They will perceive that they need to get an upper hand in a situation, an emotional situation, so they'll act really angry so that they can intimidate the other person to do what they want. Have you ever known people that just walk around almost in a rage as a matter of practice? I've known a few. I've been related to a couple of them, but not my wife. Don't you dare. Not even close. All right. The warning message of anger. The emotion of anger comes up as a warning message to let you know when you're being treated unfairly. I want you to look back at your questionnaire that you just completed, and I want you to see if this concept is true. That your anger is a reaction to perceived unfairness in your life. Do you agree or disagree with that? Yes, no, maybe. Why? Give me an example why you don't give me personal examples. I'm not interested in you bearing your soul here today in front of all these people, unless you feel like you just have to, and then you can. But you can come talk to me afterwards. We don't want to embarrass a soul. But can you give me an example? How does something that happens, one of your triggers, act as a warning message for you. Do you understand what I'm asking?
No.
Okay. Then let me start over. We've got the anger questionnaire, okay? If I feel I'm being betrayed by a friend, that's a warning sign to me that something is amiss in my relationship with that friend. A lot of people don't want to talk with people who they feel like are betraying them. They don't like conflict. They don't like dealing with certain things. They don't like unpleasantry. And so they'll just allow their anger to continue to build up inside of them. When in reality, that anger should be acting as a warning. Something needs to be done about this now. So instead of allowing it to lay there and to simmer or to build up as you go, it should become your warning sign saying, I need to do something about this. Does that make sense? So if I run across someone who tailgate, you know, I'm getting angry about that. What could I do to diffuse the situation? Honk your horn real loud and hit your brakes, right? All right, you might pull over and let them pass. Something as simple as that. Now, you may have this feeling of injustice inside of you, that this black and white right and wrong inside of you. I've known people like that. That says, I have to make this situation right. But is that always possible? No. Is it always necessary? No. And some of you are going, yes, it is. I promise it isn't. It isn't always necessary to make everything right. But your anger is what pops up that says, this isn't right. This is off kilter. This is off balance. I have to do something about this. Now, it's up to you to make the decision on how you're going to handle that. And that's what we're going to talk about in the weeks to come. So anger acts as your warning message. And so as it builds up inside of you, it says, I need to react properly. And if your anger builds, it's because you're digging in your heels. Now, sometimes it's time to take a stand. And we're not talking about that. We're not talking about a life-threatening situation when someone that you love is being threatened. We're not talking about those things. We're talking about ego and pride. We're talking about circumstances that you got to put on the importance scale, you know. And we're talking about dealing with the pent-upness of anger in your life. Because sometimes that anger trigger happens and it just like popping a balloon. And it just spews out all over everyone. And if you're in that place, that's not healthy. And that's what we need to talk about. All right. It says, fear is a natural feeling that provides you with a message warning you to pay attention to the danger ahead. In the scripture, Ezekiel chapter 8, verses 17 and 18, for those of you that are in such a mode that you would turn to your scripture, Ezekiel chapter 8, verses 17 and 18. This is God speaking to the prophet Ezekiel. He said to me, have you seen this, son of man? Is it a trivial matter for the people of Judah to do the detestable things they are doing here? Must they also fill the land with violence and continually arouse my anger? Look at them putting the branch to their nose. Now let me give you a little picture of what they're doing there. God gives them something like, you know, an offering of peace. And they take this offering of peace, and instead of cherishing it and pulling it to their heart, they go, you know, they're treating it as detestable. They're treating it like it's not important, like it stinks. Something they would cast away. He says, look at them putting the branch to the nose. Therefore, I will deal with them in anger. I will not look on them with pity or spare them. Although they shout in my ears, I will not listen to them. Why is God angry? You don't know all the circumstances, but if you're deducing from that passage, why is God angry?
He's disrespected.
He's been disrespected. Why else? They didn't appreciate what God was doing for them. That's happened to you, right? What else? Was it wrong for God to act in anger? I certainly hope not, because God said he was angry, right? It is not wrong to react in anger. It is wrong to react in uncontrolled anger. It is wrong to react in unhealthy anger. Does that make sense? Have I lost anyone? Okay. So, as we go through the rest of this day, we're going to learn more about this anger's important message. Anger provides a person with energy that can be used to help resolve an unfair or unjust situation. And that energy can be used in a healthy or an unhealthy way. In God's dealings with Israel and Ezekiel, what's the ultimate goal for God? What do you think? Is God done with them? He wants to bring them back. He demonstrates that over and over again, right? God is always about restoration of a relationship. Always. The only time he doesn't pursue restoration of relationship is if man is so rebellious and treats him as unholy that they will not react back. Right? God always has this door open. He wants mankind to be close to him. But sometimes he has to send that energy of anger toward them to try to get their attention and bring them back to him. But you never see him lose control where man crosses a line that he says, I am so done with you, there is no shot of you ever coming back to me. Now, there are times when we cross the line where we're so far gone we won't come back. But God, in his anger, pursues it in a healthy way. And we're going to talk about the ways that we can do that. So let's talk about overreactions of anger. And this is a really key moment here in this course. Anger comes from three main sources, and they add up. This week, we're going to talk about the three sources. Next week, we're going to talk about how they add up. But here are the three main sources. Anger comes from three main sources: recent frustrating events, hurtful ongoing situations, and past unresolved situations of hurt. It's like an iceberg. The majority of a person's anger can be hidden. Recent frustrating events are obvious, but the other two sources are not. Now, remember, this is written by a longtime counselor who has been doing this for years. He says, if these two often hidden anger sources have not been dealt with, they will remain unresolved, just waiting to be expressed. The anger from these long-standing sources can add to the anger that comes from a recent minor upset, and that's when an overreaction of anger occurs. In other words, if you've got these hurtful ongoing situations in your life, and we'll define these in a minute, or especially if you've got an unresolved situation from your past that's just been laying below the surface and growing in intensity, if you have some kind of frustrating event happen in your life, it can explode. And if you, by the way, if you're ever at that point, and you know if you are, that means there has to be a better way of controlling and especially processing your anger, which is what we're trying to accomplish here. By the way, where does this come out? Where does this kind of expression of anger come out the most, do you think? In the family. Why?
We spend most time in the
You spend most time with them. You love them. I'm sorry?
You love them more than.
You do love them, but why do you allow your anger to explode on your family? Yep. Right. There are structures in place where you feel like that if you explode, you're not going to destroy those relationships. Which, by the way, is very unfortunate for your family. If that's the way you feel. Because if you explode and you're trusting that those relationships are going to be able to handle it, all you're doing is just sending cannonballs into the side of the family ship. And the integrity is being slowly beaten away. And we're going to talk more in just a minute. For example, if you notice an excessive level of anger being expressed by your friend Bill over a small upset, there's a spill at the dinner table. He may be expressing some additional anger from anger. I get hangry sometime, from some hurtful ongoing situation in his life as well. The milk spilling might also trigger Bill's memory of an unresolved situation of hurt from the past. And that would add even more anger and help explain why he has such an extreme overreaction. To be able to stop having overreactions of anger, a person must learn how to deal with anger from recent frustrating events and also learn how to resolve issues that contribute to the other two sources of anger as well. Effective anger management training provides tools for which all three sources of a person's anger. These three sources of anger can add to each other, and cause an overreaction. All right, a recent frustrating event. Give me an example of a recent frustrating event, not necessarily in your life, but what would be considered one? Here's one. Go ahead.
Walmart has not had a 5-pound bag of French fries for 3 weeks. That makes me mad.
I understand. Until just recently, they haven't had sourdough English muffins for 5 months. So that's pretty upset. You're at a restaurant and somebody getting up from their chair steps on your toe. Okay? You are walking past a playground and some kid throws a water balloon and hits you in the back. You know, those are recent and frustrating. You know, those are things that cause you upset. Okay? And there may be, you know, your daughter didn't take out the trash after you told her 3 times. Right? That's a frustrating event. But it doesn't rise to the level of explosive, you know, overreaction, does it? Now, when does, by the way, your daughter not taking out the trash, when can it result in an overreaction? When you've told them and 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 they still haven't done it. That frustration can build and build and build, and it becomes a hurtful ongoing situation then, right? A hurtful ongoing situation can happen at work. You've got an overly critical boss, right? It can happen in a marriage. Your husband has a tendency to interrupt you a lot. And so these are things that can go on and on and on and on and on. And Mike, in his punniness, says that the recent frustrating events are above the sea level, S-E-E, and the hurtful ongoing situations are below it. So in other words, and that's why it's like an anger iceberg. All this anger can lay below the surface. Above the surface, you've got these recent events. And you may have a reaction and your wife goes, why are you reacting so strongly in the fact that I interrupted you today? You know, I know that bothered you, but man, you screamed at me for 5 minutes. Well, that's because that other hurt is below the level, right? And then finally, the past unresolved situation of hurt is, as a child, Bill was unfairly punished at the dinner table. I know people that can't eat a certain food because their mom would use it as punishment. You know, you're not getting up from the table till you eat all your green beans, right? Or if you don't eat your green beans, I'm going to send you to your room. You know, so as a result, they never want to eat green beans again. That's just one weird situation. But and by the way, I'm going to tell a story on myself. When my dad would get frustrated with us, and my dad, God bless him, he's been home since I was 21. And I'm grateful that he's there. He wasn't a Christian until I was a later teenager. But he would, when he would get angry and upset, he would go and sit in his brown recliner. He'd light up his cigarette and he'd fall asleep. And that's how my dad dealt with conflict. He would go to his thing, he would go to his chair, he would light his cigarette, and he would fall asleep. And that anger sometimes would spew out of him. He wouldn't beat me or anything, but he was definitely very harsh with his words. Well, and this is a confession. When my daughters would act up when they were younger, and I found this out after going to a counselor, and the counselor had me do artwork on what of what my relationship was like with my dad. And I drew a picture of myself, and this was, I think I still have the picture, crying. My dad, chair, I'm behind the chair, he's asleep in his chair with his cigarette, asleep in his chair. And all of a sudden I realized, when my girls get really angry, I go to my bedroom, where I have this big brown recliner. I sit down in my chair and I go to sleep. That was a revelation. Changed everything I did. But I had this past unresolved hurt that I wasn't even conscious of it, but I had to deal with it. And it changed the way that it related to my kids. And it helped me to deal with my anger even better. Matthew chapter 5. We brought this passage up last week. In Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse 23. This is what Jesus says to do. He says, therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them, then come and offer your gift. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. Do it while you're still together on the way. Or your adversary may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. What's Jesus describing here? He said out loud, hoping someone would respond to him. Resolving something before it goes too far. Why do that? Why is that an important step? I'm sorry?
If you don't resolve it early on, it continues to grow.
If you don't resolve it early on, it continues to grow. And it can result in consequences, right? As anger is allowed to grow, there are consequences for anger. For unresolved anger, right? I've known people that whose sleep patterns were changed because of the anger that they carried inside of them. I know people that have ruined relationships and didn't even know why their relationship was ruined. They lost their marriage. They lost their relationship with their kids. And those are extreme cases, but that's what Jesus is saying. You know, all these things that Jesus is talking about in Matthew 5 are, here is this circumstance. What would happen if the safeties were kicked out and the end result happened? Jesus, go ahead. Definitely.
In both parties, in both people that had the disagreement. And so if you had a disagreement with somebody, just because you have maybe forgiven them and able to come to the altar with your gifts, doesn't mean that maybe they have forgiven you.
Right.
So that's important. You give them thank you, so that they can. You see what I'm saying?
One of the classes in this series, we're going to talk about how we can't control what other people do when we forgive them. I wish that we could, but we can't. Sometimes other people won't forgive you.
I've noticed that in real life, if you are angry at someone or have a hard feeling or something, do something nice for them.
Yeah.
Changes everything.
Doing something nice for them can change everything. It can. Doesn't always. But it can. In Luke 11:4, Jesus, part of the model prayer, the Lord's Prayer, says, "Forgive us our sins, for we should also forgive everyone who sins against us." And then it's followed immediately with, "And lead us not into temptation." I believe those two phrases are connected with one another. Because when we don't forgive people, we are moved to continue toward a road that's going to hurt us, as well as hurt them. You see, Jesus understood, and God understands, that we have this emotion within us. I really think that anger has a bad rap. I think that, and I've talked to a lot of people who would tell me, if I asked them about what anger was, they'd say, "Well, that's bad." Anger itself is not bad, but anger misapplied or out of control is bad. And that's a distinction we've got to get. Principle number one, the kind of things we're talking about today are not for life-threatening situations. Anger management provides tools and strategies to help people with situations of anger and upset that are not life-threatening. Principle number two, anger management provides tools and strategies to help people. It helps people to release the feelings of frustration that come from recent frustrating events. It helps people to resolve more quickly conflicts that come from hurtful ongoing situations. And it helps people to release more completely resentments that come from past unresolved situations of hurt. Now, to wrap this up today, I want to bring up two things. One, I ask you to consider using an anger log, which I brought up last week, and I forgot my little notepad. A little notepad can fit into your pocket or your purse, and basically you use the anger log to write on it. And I've got, I did it for this. Y'all can't see this, but it's in your sheet if you were here last week. It's not in the one if you weren't here last week. It's on the website. You can print it, or I can give you a copy later. But the anger log, basically, at the end of your day, you reflect and you write out the situation was. It involved a store clerk. It happened today, Friday, at 10 a.m. My anger level, we talked about setting your level. My anger level for this event was a 6 out of 10, and it lasted for 4 hours. This isn't a tool to explain your anger. It's just a tool to help you see how your anger is manifested. And if you carry that anger with you until bedtime, you know, it's good to write that down. And all you're doing is setting a baseline. This is how I express my anger. If you'll keep that anger log daily, I think you'll find it to be really helpful. The second thing that I wanted to bring up, though, is this thing called my quiet place. If you ask Eva, who has been through this course twice, where her quiet place is, she will tell you that it is in a lawn chair, really a chaise lounge, on a dock at Lake of the Pines in Texas. She's very specific about it because it harkens back to one of our best family campouts. We had a great family memory there, and she got on. I took the girls. We went out fishing, and she was alone, and she took her little chase lounge out to the dock and was alone for about 2 hours and just rocked on the dock. And she says, that is my favorite memory, my quiet place. And the reason why she has a quiet place is that if something is ongoing in her life, it gives her a place to process and to release, to pray, and to be able to do more than stew. Okay? Now, it says practical application. By going to your quiet place, you can gain the choice to calm yourself when you need to. If you can't calm your mind, it can prevent you from being able to think clearly, and you might end up doing something dumb. Okay? A mental quiet place. Because we like to own our frustration. Have you noticed that? We feel like it's our right to be mad. We have been treated unfairly. Therefore, I have the right to resent. I have the right to be angry. I have the right to treat them with disrespect. Is that true as far as your relationship with God goes? What does Jesus say about forgiveness? He says we don't have a choice but to forgive, right? Why? What was that, Jim?
We won't be forgiven.
Well, one, he says, if you don't forgive others, you won't be forgiven. Oh, my goodness. That tells me I need to learn how to do this, right? What else does it tell you? Yes. Nobody hear what? Oh, no. Nobody here is perfect at all. Believe me, we all fall prey to this. This is a big one. So what we need to learn how to do, and this class is not just about defining things. This class is about learning how to process. And two of the greatest things you can do is log your anger so that you can kind of see for yourself, because most of the time we hide that from ourselves. We don't like looking at ourselves that we're people who don't handle our anger really well, but we don't really look at ourselves in the mirror very often either. And this is just a good way to look at yourself in the mirror. You don't have to share it with anybody. This is just for you. And the second thing is we need to become disciples. And being a disciple means we become a disciplined follower of Christ. And if we're a disciplined follower of Christ, then when he says that if we forgive others, if we don't forgive others, we will not be forgiven. That means we need to learn how to do it. And we need to learn how to be empowered to do it. And I promise you, the best way to learn how to be empowered to do it is to find a quiet place. Jesus called it your closet. Wherever you find where you can get away from the distractions, sometimes you can't. So you need to find that mental quiet place where you can empty yourself. And you can do the exercise of just releasing. We're going to talk more about how to do that in the weeks to come. So the anger iceberg is introduced today. You've got the ongoing things, or the recent frustrating events. You've got the hurtful ongoing situations, which are just below the surface. And you have the past unresolved situations of hurt, which are deep below the surface. Learning how to process those things are going to help you to be able to manage that anger with God's empowerment and help. And so right now, when you have this problem, write it down, find a quiet place, spend some time in prayer, and let God's Spirit lead you. And next week, we're going to talk about how your anger affects your life goals, how it can affect the very direction of your life. And then we're going to do a little exercise that I think will help you to move forward in dealing with your anger. Any comments on any of that? I'm moving fast. As I said last week, This material is set to do about an hour and 15 minute class. We're doing it in 45 minutes. So if we go through this and you say, man, I wish we could talk more about that, come talk to me. We may take an extra week and do some explaining and exploring. And we are going to have a little more activity and discussion as we go through this. And also, one more time, if you feel like I'm talking about you personally, one, I promise you I'm not. But these things are so common that a lot of people feel like that, you know, you must know something about me that's not true. It's just that a lot of us deal with this. And a lot of us deal with this on a very personal level. If your chosen mode of parenting is screaming, if your relationship with your husband or wife is all about arguing, if your relationships at work are troubling, if you find yourself with extended family not being able to talk and get along, chances are we're going to be going over some things that will help you. So please keep coming. And thank you for your time.